This is Christine Blackburn, and I want to personally thank each and every one of you guys for listening to Storyworthy. Storyworthy has more listeners than ever before, and really, it's thanks to you guys. So please, tell a friend, a coworker, or a family member about the Storyworthy podcast, and then we can keep the shows coming. Now let's get to it.
Hello, this is Maggie Roswell, or Sally Kellerman, whichever one you want it to be, and you're listening to Storyworthy. That'd be fantastic. Maybe I'm drunk.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we are coming to you from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at the Milwaukee Riverfront. We are at the Bronze Fonz, the statue of Henry Winkler as the Fonz in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Why are we
in Milwaukee at the Bronze Fonz?
Well, our guest tonight, Maggie Roswell, of course, among her many credits is Maude Flanders on The Simpsons, but yeah. That's not what caught my eye when I looked at IMDb. She was on both Laverne and Shirley and Happy Days.
All right.
And I will use any excuse to have us come from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, my hometown. So now here we are on the bridge by the Bronze Fonz. It's fantastic.
And who donated that statue to the city of Milwaukee?
It was made by American artist Gerald P. Sawyer, who lives outside of Milwaukee.
I see. And he just made this statue and he put it right there in Milwaukee.
Well, he didn't just dump it. We're a bunch of, you know, Germans. We can't have people just unregulated putting public outwork out there. It had to be many regulations and people came. Yeah, but it was a big thing. Henry Winkler and the entire regular cast of Happy Days came to Milwaukee when they dedicated it because apparently they had nothing better to do.
I don't know what Maggie Roswell played on Happy Days. We'll have to ask her that because when I think of Maggie Roswell, I just think, like what you said, Maude Flanders.
Well, right, exactly. That, of course, is more. So we were maybe going to come from Springfield, and I said, no, I'm not going with the obvious.
Yeah.
I'm going
with Milwaukee. That would have been obvious, right.
Yeah.
You know, Maggie wasn't only Maude Flanders. She was also Helen Lovejoy.
Helen Lovejoy.
Miss
Hoover. I love Helen Lovejoy.
And Lou Anne Van Houten.
Yeah. Wait, which one?
Lou Anne Van Houten. And Miss Hoover. And then many, many other characters, and I can't wait to talk about that casting of The Simpsons because
it's going to be great.
Like, The Simpsons is like so prevalent in my life.
It's prevalent in Storyworthy. We have two shows that we keep getting people on from that was almost like a sentence on Storyworthy, Simpsons and Seinfeld.
Yeah.
I think the Seinfeld is had by one guest now. So we need one more Simpsons guest.
The Simpsons, we had Dana Gould.
Right.
And we had John Mathot, the animator. And now we have Maggie.
Seinfeld, we had Fred Stoller.
Right.
And Toby Huss.
And Rick Overton.
So actually, they're even. They're pulled even, ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
So the next one is going to be the tiebreaker, and they will win absolutely nothing.
So we are very excited to have Maggie here. And her topic tonight, Hannes, is my reentry into Los Angeles. Reentry into L.A., meaning that, in fact, she lived here, she grew up here, she left here, and now she's back.
She grew up here. She's the one. There had to be one person who was born in Los Angeles.
Yeah, exactly. She's a Southern
California
native.
I believe the subtitle is La La Land Part Deux.
Yeah, that's exactly the title of her story. But when I think of, like, first of all, I'm not leaving Los Angeles because I love it here.
Yes.
But, like, I play tennis with this guy, and his wife just got a job in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. So they're moving to Chapel Hill, which is not a cheap place to live either.
And probably not a bad place to live.
No, beautiful place. But the point is then he's like, well, we'll probably come back to L.A. within 10 years. And I was thinking to myself, like, how that would be to scale back down. I mean, the cost of living, I think, is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, people don't really understand. I mean, it's not like New York, which is completely insane.
Yeah.
But it's pretty bad out here compared to – because I'll go back to, say, Milwaukee like we are right now. Mm-hmm. We could go rent an entire house for probably
$1,000. $1,000 in LA.
We could rent a house. We could each have a floor.
And in LA, it's basically a one-bedroom apartment is $1,000. A two-bedroom apartment is $2,000. A three-bedroom apartment is $3,000. It's basically $1,000 a bedroom.
Right. Now, the less English you're willing to put up with on signs, the cheaper it'll be. This is basically the way you're, you know,
Did you ever go out to, I think it's in San Gabriel. I mean, it's like Asia in terms of the signage and the restaurants.
No, San Gabriel is Asia. It's deep in the valley is Mexico. I used to live in Koreatown. And I was going to say, I lived on the border of Guatemala and Korea. Because you would go out and on Western Boulevard and you turn one way, all the signs are in Spanish. And if you turn the other way, all the signs are in Korean.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was, not to all sound white and racist, but I was scared all the time.
Oh, you were.
I wasn't scared all the time. Yeah. It was fabulous.
That was Maplevale. Wasn't that your Maplevale
place? Maplewood.
You were like two blocks from Paramount Studios.
That's true. I was actually very close to Paramount. I actually had an audition for Monk there, and my car died, and I was actually able to walk to the audition. That's the only time that's ever happened to me in the history of Hollywood. By the way, I didn't get it.
Of course. No doubt about it.
I was like, because what you think in your head is you're like, well, obviously the universe is helping me out because I can make this audition. Mm-hmm. So obviously I'm going to get this, which is going to pay for the repair of my car. And then the casting director up in the sky goes, fuck you, kid. And he ashes, cigar ashes down on your head.
Yeah, and that's what happens.
Yes.
So Maggie now lives back here in California. She had moved to Colorado, to Denver. And now she's back
Denver,
in L.A.
Home of pot and fish. Smoked fish and smoked people.
Okay.
That's a little inside joke just for us.
That's just for us. Great. That's podcasting gold.
What I want to do is I want to talk about like William F. Buckley or something that nobody understands who the hell it is.
You know,
and also people that aren't even in the room.
I will say it's funny between California and Colorado because you go to Colorado and there's this like – because I lived there for a couple of years. And yeah. I have a friend.
Weren't those your cocaine years?
They were my cocaine years, to be honest with you. Dude, that was like 85, 86. That was a long time ago.
I'm not saying it wasn't a long time ago. All I remember about you saying is I was in Colorado. I was sleeping on it. My boyfriend and I at the time were driving a VW van with a mattress in the back, doing coke, driving through Colorado.
And your problem? My point is that
you were driving a VW van.
Colorado, there's a lot of people there that say like, "Oh, you the goddamn California people keep coming in," you know? Like
yeah.
There's this thing about and then California, there's a lot of Colorado people here. So there's kind of something between
I know why.
Wait, Sean Merrick seems to know why. Does it have to do with marijuana? What?
No, it has to do with the Northridge earthquake.
The Northridge earthquake somehow has a connection.
Because everybody got scared in California, they moved out to Denver. My wife's from Denver.
Okay. So that's what happened. Sean Merrick has the information.
You know what's also podcast gold? Screaming from 5 feet away from a microphone. That's what's podcast gold. Ladies and gentlemen, our sound engineer
is
leaning back as far away as possible from a microphone. Does he get up out of the chair? No.
Red tornado. One little earthquake and people really do run.
Yeah.
People really split.
I know, but you know, you can't. I always say something's going to kill you. It's like we have earthquakes, what, every 10, a real earthquake every 10 to 20 years, right? Tornadoes happen in the plains
much more
every single 3 times a month for 4 months.
And you want to live in Colorado and drive on I-70 in a snowstorm, which they're going to close the goddamn road anyway, and then you're screwed.
Yeah,
I mean, there's like one road that runs
actually,
through the state.
I have to say this about Denver. When I first moved out here, we drove out here and then went back on Greyhound to Milwaukee to get our stuff.
That's a nightmare.
Because that's a white trash dream right there. So fucking we're on a Greyhound bus headed in somewhere outside of Denver and we hit – it must have been that the whole place was ice because our bus turns and starts sliding sideways across 3 lanes of traffic on the edge of a cliff straight to where – in slow motion, of course. And everybody just steers out of the way. And we're like, what? There's like, what? And then the guy straightens the bus out and keeps driving. And nobody said anything. Like, we're all just going to pretend that didn't happen.
Oh, my God.
And so that's all I know about
Denver.
Those
roads drive me. I mean, it is really, really wild. I mean, when you're getting up into the mountains.
Yes. No, it's crazy. I just came back from driving up in Central California. It's like, you know, you're driving the coast. You're driving the one. And you're like, this is so gorgeous. This is so gorgeous. An hour in, you're like, can I fucking go straight for 3 seconds? Can I possibly, you know, you're just turning. You turn the wheel, you turn left, right, left, right,
honestly,
left,
you
right,
complain
left, right.
About anything.
I really can.
I mean, honestly, you're complaining about PCH.
I know, the most beautiful place. No, it's great. I think if I just had a helicopter, maybe that would be. So, you know what you want to do? If you can go to our Patreon ad, patreon.com, and you can support us with $10 or $15 or $5 a month, then I can get a helicopter.
There you go.
It's a cover for me getting a helicopter.
All right, here's what Hannes is talking about, you guys. If you head over to storyworthypodcast.com
Yes,
you can do a couple of things there. We have a new refurbished website. A couple of things you can do there. One is click on our Patreon ad.
Right.
It's an ongoing campaign to help creators keep creating. That's what we're doing here.
Yeah, basically. And you can give as little as $2 a month.
$2 a month is 25 cents a show.
Yeah, 25 cents a show. You could take a quarter right now and throw it in the toilet. Or you can send it to us. These are your choices.
That's not our listeners, honest.
You can throw a quarter in the toilet. Or you can send it to us. We actually want you to tape a quarter to a piece of paper. And see how that doesn't work? We need you to pledge $2 a month.
Sean Merrick's cell phone just went off.
Sean Merrick, our sound engineer's phone just went off. Ladies and gentlemen.
Storyworthypodcast.com. You can click on our Amazon ad. When you're shopping on Amazon, we get a little kickback. Everybody's happy. Doesn't cost you anything more.
Exactly. You can buy something to put your weed in if you live in Colorado.
Feel free. It's honest, you drive me crazy. Okay. Feel free to follow us on Twitter at Storyworthy. And, well, no, you just drive me crazy because of the marijuana thing. We've got medicinal marijuana here. I mean, I know it's not full on recreational marijuana, but you always have to put that in like it's. I mean,
I know. Do you know why I do that?
But we need to be taking.
Look at yourself in the mirror, and that's why I do that because you go crazy every single time.
Because he always makes it seem like marijuana is a vice, and it's not a vice.
I didn't say it was a vice. Now, someone get me some more sausage.
Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned because we've got a fantastic storyteller coming up. Maggie Roswell is on her way here, so stay tuned. Next time on Storyworthy, we have writer-comedian Steve Belanger.
And I'm going to be talking about the night I met Bono.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hi, this is John Mathot, the co-host of Horrible Movie Night at the Nerdmelt Theater in Hollywood, California, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
We're back. We are now in the offices of Visit Milwaukee, the nonprofit group that paid for the bronze fonts. And they're working to make Milwaukee a place for tourism and interest. They should be paying me. I've probably done more for the public image of Milwaukee.
You really have.
On Storyworthy.
You'd think we'd have more fans in Milwaukee, Hannes, to be honest with you.
Well, you can't expect them to be
you know
with
where most
with
of our fans are. You know where most of our listeners are? I'm not
Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. Isn't that interesting?
Are we just being listened to by the NSA? Is that what's going on?
I think it makes us sound smart.
I'd like to think that.
I'd like to think that.
I don't know. We really have to. Okay, if you're listening, if you're from Washington, D.C., please write us at storyworthy.com. Seriously, tell us why you're listening to us. We probably don't want to make people think about it too much because they'll be like, why am I listening to
That's
this
right.
bullshit?
No, don't say that. Yeah, or head over to storyworthypodcast.com and then there's a link with email and you could do that.
Yeah, a link with email. Exactly. Just we're curious. Give me some more information about Maggie Roswell.
All right, here we go. Maggie Roswell is here right now. She is an Emmy Award-winning voiceover artist, and she's well known for her work, Hannes, on The Simpsons, like we said, of Maude Flanders, Helen Lovejoy, Miss Hoover,
Maude
and Luann Van Houten, as well as several minor characters as well. Now, she's also done a couple of feature films, including Lost in America. How much did you love that movie?
I love that. My favorite part of Lost in America, the part that made me laugh the loudest, even though I still lived in the Midwest, was he's driving an enormous Winnebago, and he gets to Manhattan, and he gets off the bridge and goes, there's a parking spot, and parks directly in front of the building. And I was like, that's the funniest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life.
She was also in the movie Pretty in Pink. How funny is that? She's also on a lot of television shows, like we said, Remington Steele, Happy Days.
I know, my whole childhood.
And she was along with Tim Conway on the Tim Conway Show with Harvey Korman.
Tim Conway.
Those guys.
Love that guy.
Yeah, so talented. Unbelievable. She also received an Annie nomination for her work as Sherry Bobbins in the Sir Send-Up of Mary Poppins. And I've heard her voice, Hannes. You can't believe how well she sings.
I can believe it.
I know, it's just so
interesting. She came in, she was singing.
Okay.
She was like,
okay.
I'm here. We're like, hi,
singer.
You know, it's not a musical.
You can find her over on Twitter at Maggie Roswell or on her website at maggieroswell.com. Folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Maggie Roswell.
Yay! Hello. How are you? So would you like me to read it now? I certainly will. This is called La La Land 2 because I am back. I was jolted awake as if a rhino had slammed into my bed. It was March 2014, and I had just moved back to L.A. from Colorado.
I was staying with my sister-in-law in a glass and steel house at the top of Lookout Mountain in Hollywood. An earthquake? Really? We walked around the house to see with that strong magnitude if it was still in one piece. My phone buzzed like a beehive. All of my old friends from L.A. were texting me, "Welcome back. The earth moved because you're here. We haven't had a good wake-up call like that since you left. Bet they could feel that one in Colorado." Yeah, I'm home. I left in L.A. in early 94 after the Rodney King riots and the last big quake. My husband Hal and I stood on our deck in the Hollywood Hills and saw the fires and heard the gunshots. We were trying to wrap our head around the fact of how this riotous night in L.A. could look like an everyday Beirut. We had just adopted our daughter Spencer, and all I could think of was, how can we raise her in the midst of this madness? Then the big quake happened and we moved. But if you have to understand, this wasn't my first quake rodeo. I rode the last Richter scale ride back in the 70s when I still lived with my parents. I will never forget the sound of dogs howling, breaking glass, and the helpless feeling when you realize that there's no place to go when your world is crashing around you. I grew up in L.A., seventh generation Los Angelino, part of the first century families of California. I was lucky enough to be raised in Hancock Park in one of those big honking houses with my four brothers and sisters. My dad was an executive and my mom a homemaker. Ah, the late 50s, when life appeared to be idyllic. Of course, all of us who grew up in those big houses thought when you turned 21, someone just handed you the keys to one of the mansions and said, "Welcome to your new home." Others speculated that their parents would leave a big trust fund. Yeah, not so much. In our case, my dad was from the Depression and said, "You kids have to make it on your own." So I became an actress, an honorable profession that everyone knows just screams making money. Or the catchphrase, "Would you like fries with that?" To be fair, I did have a very successful career without having to push French fries. I did movies like Lost in America and Pretty in Pink. I starred on the Tim Conway Show and NBC's Comedy Break. I performed for years in on-camera commercials and episodics. In between my TV life, I did lots of stage and even Broadway. I finally ended up in a sketch on the Tracy Ullman Show, and the casting director, Bonnie Pietola, asked if I wanted to audition for a new series based on shorts called The Simpsons. For the last 25 years, I've been part of the legacy of the longest-running cartoon series on primetime television, so my career worked out pretty well by many standards. Back to our move to Colorado. We lived for 20 years in a lovely little cul-de-sac in a development called Homestead. The transition there was a bit of a standstill compared to L.A. life. On move-in day, the neighbors across the street brought us over some dinner and a bottle of wine and said, "Welcome to the neighborhood." My friends that were with us said, "Who does that? Where have you moved to, Stepford or Wisteria Lane?" Actually, for me, it was a slice of hometown heaven. No auditions, driving, meetings, driving, jobs, elation, heartache, driving, and oh yeah, more driving. Overnight, I was transformed in this neighborhood. I was just known as Spencer's mom, Hal's wife, a Leave It to Beaver lifestyle. All I had to worry about on the road was an occasional carpool. My world centered around homework, swim team, which book to read for book club, and if I was strong enough tennis player and skier for the neighborhood. I was a 40-year-old soccer mom, a little old for that moniker, but age did not seem to matter as much here. When we first got to Denver, some people would ask, "What do you do for a living?" We replied, "We're in the business." And they would politely respond, "What business?" Yep, we were out of Hollywood, all right. We built our recording studio in our spacious basement. Yes, they have basements there. And we officially moved Roswell and Rail to Colorado. I was still on The Simpsons, and I would fly myself back and forth to Los Angeles on Thursdays for the table read, and then Mondays for the record. That schedule was 2 weeks on and 1 week off from March through November. Grueling, but doable. Since it was unheard of for anyone to do the show remotely, we would find out how the experience of being studio owners, producers, and entrepreneurs would serve us later in the story. My husband, Hal Rail, had left his successful animation career after years in voiceover in such series as Muppet Monsters, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, movies like The Predator and Ghoulies, to create a new business for us back away from L.A. and NYC. Friends said, "Oh, you'll be back." A few years later, they said, "Wow, I thought you'd be back by now." Finally, they said, "How did you know to get out?" As they say in the movies, cut to November 2013. My daughter Spencer in her junior year in college saying, "When I graduate, I'm going to L.A. Actually, she said it through middle school and then high school, then in college. "I thought it was just a phase and she'd get over it." But she didn't. Of course, breezing through L.A. with your friends always looks incredible, especially to Spencer. Parties, premieres, comedy clubs, the beach, things to do when you're on vacation. During those times and through the years when I visited L.A., I came up with a few observations. In our speed-up-and-gloss-over society, we never want things to change. Even our moods are tempered by Prozac. The seasons are a natural timetable. In Colorado, they would say things like, two winters ago was the best snow, and the last spring we spruced things up. I realized that living yearly with four seasons gave us a passage of time. There was an evolvement. Dare I say, aging. No one ages in Los Angeles. Hollywood won't let you. When I used to do on-camera television series like Tim Conway's show and Comedy Break and years on episodics doing comedy and drama, the agents would lie about my age because if you were 24, there is no way any casting director would cast you as 22. Once my little sister asked me if I was older or younger than she was by now. I said, oh, no, honey, you passed me up years ago. You'd look at television, and when you saw your favorite actor's age, you would think, wow, what happened to them? They were so young in their Warhol 15 minutes ago. In November of 2013, Hal started to do some Comic-Cons. If you've never been to one, you have to go. I used to think that there was only San Diego, one of the biggest cons, au contraire. They are across the country and around the world. Australia, Paris, New Zealand, Canada, Milan, the list goes on. They revere anyone who has been or associated with animation, gaming, comic books, and cosplay, costume players online for those who are not in the know, as well as cable shows like Walking Dead and Orange is the New Black. Sci-fi lovers have had Star Trek conventions for years. Now they have a company in their passions and costumes. People are dressed up as superheroes, robots, characters from their favorite anime. The fans are very sweet and kind. You feel like a rock star. It was at the con when my husband Hal and myself got back together after 20 years with the animation voice people, our tribe, if you will. Funny, edgy, crazy. Even after a 20-year gap, no time had passed. We got back home, and after a few weeks, when I confronted Hal as to what was wrong, he said, I miss all that. Now, you have to understand, for years, I had said at different points, you want to move back? He said, no. He knew it was great to have Spencer and Cherry Creek schools. I was happy. The studio was successful in Colorado. But it was the people that he missed. The outrageous opportunities and the Hollywood merry-go-round that allows you to reach for the brass ring daily. I had just taken an early retirement package. Yes, folks, don't be shocked. But in 20 years, I actually aged. Although Hal and I both don't look our age as much because of less stress, we had just redone our 3,000-square-foot house in Colorado. We had a great set of friends. And when some of them moved out of the neighborhood to downsize, they'd say, well, when are you guys going to move? I'd say, I'm going out of here in a body bag. But when I asked that question for the billionth time that snowy night in November, do you want to move back? He said, yes. I laughed and I said, oh, God. You know, for a second, I thought you said yes. He said, I did. What? Needless to say, I was in shock. Logically, Spencer was in her senior year in college. The house was too big for just the two of us, et cetera, but at 61, to start act three of our lives, was I really going to make this happen? I am your wife. Goodbye, Colorado life. Not quite like the Green Acres theme song, but after 28 years of marriage, when the person you love most in the world is unhappy, you got to go. When we moved from our house in the Hollywood Hills after the 90s quake, some friends of ours bought one of those honkin' Hancock Park mansions for $650,000. That house is now worth about $4 million. After the riots and quake, you couldn't give houses away in L.A. Of course, now we're back. And you'd be thrilled to find a bungalow for $1 million. Needless to say, besides the price, area was important. We had to come from a cul-de-sac, so it was hard to jump from Grover's Corners back into the urban sprawl. And you all get how much I love driving. So we settled on Burbank. We're a block away from Disney, Warner Brothers, Nickelodeon. It's easy to jump on and off the freeway and has a sweet small town feel. So we're back. The entertainment is incredible and available daily. The food variety is plentiful and delicious. All of the old friends are thrilled to have us back, but everyone is so busy, I probably see a lot of them as much as I did when I'd fly back in from Colorado. We signed with innovative artists and an amazing, very well-respected agency. We are building yet another recording studio because, as it turns out, now the agents and casting people don't want you to come into the office. They want you to audition and many times do jobs from your house. Turns out we were ahead of the curve in having our own recording studio 20 years ago. Everyone in the business wants broadcast quality. Your average working actor now has to come up with a high-end voice audition on an actor's salary to compete. On-camera commercials and TV have shifted to casting superstars. You have to work twice as hard for half as much money. The traffic is not just slow, but it has turned into a glacial moving parking lot. My husband is in heaven. And as for me, Cue the earthquake.
Wait a minute, Maggie, you're saying you want to leave.
Oh, yeah. I would leave in a heartbeat.
Oh, no, no kidding.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Okay, so you're not happy where you are in Burbank?
No, actually, you know, I'm very happy with it. It's just, it was great to, you know, basically, it was like being retired. You know, you're retired. Yeah. And I was good with that. I could fly in. I was doing Little Simpsons. We were doing other voiceover from our studio. But to actually do the animation, which is what Hal does, it's so much better to be here.
You can't compare.
There are a couple of people that can do a couple of things outside. I mean, Simpsons is very different because, like, Harry Shearer now is in New Orleans and Hank Azaria is in New York. And, you know, we're all over the place. So for that, it's not a problem. But if you want to really work in animation, doing the games, doing a lot of that stuff, they want you here.
Yeah. I understand that. Can you hear a freeway from where you're at, where your house is?
No. Actually, the great thing is we're a block away from Disney. So I wanted to be close enough to be able to get out as fast as I could and to go in Burbank. But none of the airplanes fly over, which is fantastic because, of course, I think Disney would shoot them down. So
yeah, you're not in that flight path.
Yeah, we're not in the flight path.
Yeah, they would just dissolve.
Yeah, they would dissolve and it would just be done like a vampire.
Yeah, funny, Burbank, because that's where I moved when I first came to L.A. And it's like it's a separate place.
It's a separate place.
It does have a small town
feel. And it's got a small town feel. I love that they own their police department and their fire department and everything. It's like, and they have their own grid for power.
Right.
So it's like if everything else goes down everywhere,
we will have IKEA, we will have Burbank.
Yes, and you have, and Costco, you know. So, but it's been, you know, it's actually been just a long transition for me, although it's only been since March 15th, so I'm still getting used to it.
So you've been back in L.A. for just about 4 or 5 months?
Yeah.
Oh, Maggie, so this is very fresh.
Oh, this is very fresh.
I know, I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah.
So
So that was, for me, having that there, Hal never engaged as much. Guys, I don't think, sorry, guys, I'm just thinking. You know, the women.
I'm sorry, what'd you say? I was just staring into space.
I know, thank you. So the you know, guys just don't engage as much and make friends as fast a lot of the time. And I had a lot of good friends, and Hal was friends with their husbands. A lot of time you get that.
Yeah.
But he said, my good friends are back here. I'd like to do stuff. And he had really, really good friends there. But part of it was engaging with the people. And I think there's part of him in the back of his head always wanting to come back.
Yeah.
So for me, I was good with it. I'm from here for forever.
So why didn't you consider going back to Larchmont?
Because in Hancock Park, I mean, it's $8 billion.
Yeah, the money.
Those
homes.
Yeah, the money is insane.
Larchmont was an area of Los Angeles, ladies and gentlemen, that was formerly known as like the Beverly Hills, before Beverly Hills kind of came into fruition.
Yeah, Hancock Park is where millionaires lived at the turn of the previous century.
Yeah.
And it's like, and the houses are still there.
Enormous.
Well, all of them are there, and all the stars are living there now.
Right.
So
stars don't live in Beverly Hills anymore. No, that's all more producers and lawyers.
That's all oil money.
You know, Ellen DeGeneres and all those guys, they had moved in. You had all these, I mean, a bunch, like you'll always hear, they'll say, oh yes, we live in Hancock Park now. And you go on Larchmont, which used to be where we would ride our Schwinn bikes up to. And people, now they call it the Boulevard.
Yeah.
So they're on the Boulevard and they're having, you know, they have little restaurants and all that kind of
stuff. There's a lot of cool restaurants, but it's become much more hoity-toity and a bit pretentious in the past 20 years that I've lived here.
Oh yeah. And and they have the L.A. Tennis Club and all that stuff.
Oh, that's a beautiful facility.
It really is a beautiful place to live.
It is. My daughter goes to the dentist there, and it works out quite well.
Your daughter goes to the dentist to the L.A. Tennis Club?
No, in Larchmont.
Oh, okay.
Let me ask you something. You have one daughter.
Yes.
And I have one daughter. I find that in Los Angeles, there are no seasons, and it's the passage of time is kind of hard to judge. But right. I find with the school years, that's how I judge it, because my daughter's in school.
And I do that. But I used to do, which makes me laugh, is that when I lived here, you know, you knew that the season had changed by, you know, putting up like Christmas lights. You
yes.
It must be Christmas by this time. And then, you know, when people call me, they go, it must be great. It's 85 all the time. I said, it's 85 all the time. For me, I did love the fall. I love. And the winter I was good with. So when we got to the summer, and the summers there are brutal.
They're very humid. Colorado is extremely hot.
But Denver has, but it's also dry. It's a dry heat. And it's a dry cold. So the cold, when I would leave Denver, to come into L.A.
Yeah.
And I would leave there at 20 degrees, and I'd fly in for The Simpsons, and it was 60 degrees. It would feel much colder because of the humidity that was here.
I see.
It was there.
I see. Okay, so, boy, I tell you, we got to get into The Simpsons because, I mean, you know, I don't know. The Simpsons has just stood the test
of
time.
It's iconic, ladies and gentlemen.
It is iconic, and it does feel like a lot of conversations come down to The Simpsons, like when you're on set at a random moment in Los Angeles, no matter what you're working on, and everybody's just hanging out. Somehow, everybody starts talking about The Simpsons. I mean, it's so in the vernacular.
It has been. It's been amazing to also watch the transition in animation all the way around. Things that when Miss Hoover, when they created Miss Hoover, there was the moment where Marge Simpson had painted the picture of Mr. Burns.
Yeah.
And at that time, they were saying, oh, you know, be careful of my genitalia, be careful. And then they said, oh, you can't say that. Be careful of my, you know, ding dong or something. No, 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 you can't say that. And now you see all the things that are said on any animation.
Yeah,
anywhere.
Exactly.
Family Guy, any of those. It's like, it's a
nothing.
Joke.
Yeah.
But, and when Miss Hoover was created from one line where she looks at the picture and she says, he's bad, but he'll die. And then that was it. And they said, okay, we're going to create this character, Miss Hoover. And you know, the woman that said he's bad, but he'll die, make Miss Hoover her.
Oh, wow.
So I had to build this whole character. Like all my characters were already built off of being Helen Lovejoy. I tried to figure out what kind of woman would be exactly with Reverend Lovejoy and,
yeah.
you know, all full of it. And then Maude Flanders, because, of course, Ned Flanders was, you know, from the Midwest, and she was just...
Yeah.
And that was...
Oh, I understand what you're saying.
You know how it is. And so for me, when they killed me on the show, I was probably bigger in death than I ever was in life because when they killed me, they also, which I think the writers have found, when I talked to one of the writers, I said... You killed me?
Yeah.
I
want to ask you about that moment. First of all, the fact that they did kill off Maude Flanders was just like the craziest thing.
It was shocking for the people on the show.
It was shocking
for
everybody.
They actually opened their scripts because a lot of people didn't read them before, you know, they would do it. They would open their scripts, and as they were reading, a lot of the people hadn't read the scripts, and they look and they said, and then Maude Flanders goes off the you know, bleachers
top of the
and
stadium,
dies.
Yeah.
And they said that there was, people were like, and part of it, I think, was, oh, my God, they could kill me, too. And then the other part of it was, oh, my God, I cannot believe this happened. Because if you look at a lot of the characters, a lot of my characters were vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Lisa and Marge Simpson are very vulnerable. Ralph is vulnerable.
Oh, I love Ralph.
I know. And say Ralph is so.
Your breath smells like dead bunnies.
Yeah, I love
that's
him.
That's my favorite
line. One of the ones that we have that I always did with him when he goes, oh, could I have another worm? No, why don't you sleep while the others are learning? And he goes, sleep, that's where I'm a Viking, which we always say when we're taking a nap. Sleep, that's where I'm a Viking.
That is so darn funny.
But, you know, so that it has been an amazing journey, even with that.
So what was the, when did you find out they were going to kill Maude Flanders? And then when did you have to
show? I quit the show on the 10th year and I came back on the 13th.
Right, because you came back, the Treehouse of Horrors, you mean?
Right.
With that. Okay, so that was the Treehouse of Horrors 13.
Yeah.
And there was a seance and then you were like hovering above.
And then
that was
hovering.
A big deal. They had a big build up to that,
yes,
that you were coming
did.
Back, which
well,
was
see,
exciting.
And actually I was killed twice because Sherry Bobbins had been sucked into fuselage.
Yes,
and
that's
then,
right.
You know, so it's like you think about it, you go,
oh,
okay, I've
gosh.
Actually been killed. Then, you know, probably like Wile E. Coyote. But, you know, I've just, for regular TV, I was killed and just, you know. That
but
like,
I wonder, what was the feeling of that when you found out they were killing Maude Flanders?
It was horrific.
Where
I
were
mean,
you? Do you
well,
remember?
I was at
did
the house
you record the voice of Maude Flanders in the episode
no.
where you got killed?
No,
that was somebody else.
They had
doing
a
that.
Gal that from New York, and she wasn't doing any of my characters. And later, when I talked to one of the guys, producers, I said, "Wow, I mean, did you have to kill me? That was a little brutal." And he said, "Well, you know what? Your voices were really hard to match."
Wow.
I said, "It's as if only I could do them." I don't know. So then I came back on the 13th. There were these characters that were that they put in an environment. And so when they put them in the environment, they put voice chips for each character. And the toy company.
I'm not sure. I'm not understanding that.
By environment.
It's an environment. They had a Simpsons environment, like with Miss Hoover, they would put her in a classroom.
Okay, I see.
Or, you know, so then, and you could get these environments by this toy company, and then you could put in different Simpsons characters.
Oh.
And they're little, and they would have a voice chip that would say something, one
right.
of their things, like Helen loves going, think of the children. You know, so all of that would be in there. Well, when the toy company found out that my voice was not going to be in those. Then they said, well, we're not going to make those toys.
Oh, wow.
And then Fox, that's when we started discussing things again about me doing it in Colorado. And so I did it there. But initially, I was flying myself back and forth. You know, it's been like so many years. It's like 26 years. So it's, you know,
it just seems impossible that right. It's been that long.
But for
it doesn't
us, it was
feel
very
like that.
Good to have because we had our insurance all that time.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like it has been a gift.
Sure.
A gift from God.
Sure.
You know, so for us to have done this and for me to have been killed was fantastic.
Isn't that amazing how life works out like that?
Yeah.
Can I just say, you just reminded me of a story that Dana Gould told us. And so Dana Gould is producing, right? And they're having a writing session. And he calls up and he says, hey, can we get some, can we order like 10 pizzas? We're going to be here late. And the guy's like, oh, I don't know if I can authorize that. And Dana Gould's like, The Simpsons paid for this fucking building. This building wouldn't exist.
The Fox lot.
Get us
is
10
mostly.
Pizzas, you cheap bastards.
Well, the thing is that I don't know if you saw that Rupert Murdoch is going to, for $80 billion, is going to be buying.
Take over Time Warner.
Time Warner.
Oh, right? No,
and
I didn't.
So,
know that.
Yeah, so yeah. That, and that within the 40, there'll be 40% if that
goes
the deal
through.
Goes through. So, you know, it really is, it's quite a bit. You know, and of course, I can have no comment because I would like to keep doing The Simpsons. I think they're fantastic. I love every moment of them.
By the way, Rupert Murdoch's voice when he appears on The Simpsons, that's not Rupert Murdoch, is it? It's somebody else.
No. I
would love it if
so.
It was actually him.
Yeah, no way. No. Yeah, wouldn't that be good?
So tell me, how's your daughter doing out here, by the way?
Well, she's not here yet. She's still in Colorado.
Oh, she's still in Colorado.
She's going to graduate, and she has kind of a...
Now she doesn't want to move here because her parents are here.
Well,
nice work,
exactly,
Mom.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I was thinking. How bad could that be? No, it would be great if she came out here and she, you know, it's after college. It's going to be like, I think, a big shocker. Instead of coming, you know,
where is she in school at right now?
She's at CSU up in Fort Collins.
Oh, how nice. Yeah.
So great school.
So I hope you give Ellie a chance again, Maggie.
This sounds much more bitter than I really am. But there's so much frustration, I think, in watching now the friends that I've had that have been the creatives for so long.
Right.
You know, as Rick Overton actually said the other day. He had said, you know too much. We knew what the business was before. You're trying to really be okay with the fact that it has shifted as much as it has and that all the jobs have shifted as much as they have. And we're all lucky enough to have pensions and stuff like that. But there are a lot of people, like the kids coming in now, you want to say to actors, good luck on that.
Yeah, of
because
course.
A lot of the things that we fought for, a lot of the things we've done, it's just opened up. You know, it's just different and it changes.
I think
the haves and have-nots have gotten much
further
larger.
Apart.
Yeah. And I always knew about that. And but I think it's more glaring when you're with your friends and as people are aging or people are not being able to make their insurance and all of that stuff. That's when it really makes you sad.
Right. But the good news is that now anybody, everything's on such a consumer level.
Right.
You want a podcast, go get a podcast.
Right.
You want a TV show, make it on YouTube. I mean, so there's a lot more power in our hands.
But by the same token, and that is a reality. By the same token, the cash flow of that can take a long time.
You're preaching to the choir. But Maggie, I can't wait to get cast.
I know, exactly.
What am I going to sit around?
Oh, no,
I can't fucking wait
for
people.
I mean, the creative piece of it and the creative things that people are doing, and that's what I've told my daughter the same way. It's like we tell people, we do all these seminars to people to say, you have to put your tendrils out.
Right.
You have to figure out what you can do. I mean, we were writing and producing when we were in Colorado ringtones. Mm-hmm. And we rode that whole ringtone wave until people just wanted to text.
You know, the ringtone wave back in the late 90s.
But for us, it really was
What
great
was that like?
Was
how interesting.
Well, the wild thing is we used to write radio spots. And we would go from 60-second to 30-second.
To 15.
To 15, which was outrageous. You were thinking, how can you tell a joke in that time?
Yeah.
And then we went to 4 seconds. It's just joke. Okay. And that's really what it was. So when we were first doing the ringtones, and then you were doing it all the different phones. But I think it was that time. And the wild thing for us is that we went to New Orleans, ironically, just before the Katrina.
The Katrina, yeah.
And it was 2 weeks before. Ugh. We were in there for a convention. We were conventioneers. And we were laughing because all of a sudden when we looked and saw what technology, where it was going, And this was back in the day. So where it was going, and we went, oh, my God, this looks like the 80s in TV and when there was, and studios and the parties and all this stuff. They were flying people in, bands. I mean, it was
happening.
The most outrageous thing I've seen. And then you're looking and you're going, oh, my God, it's all about the phone.
Wow.
It's all about that.
Wow.
And it's not all the things of TV and what we knew it to be and where all of your shows that you used to do, you know, were going to be. And it should evolve. That's the whole deal.
That's the beauty of it.
It is. It's a very, it is creatively, it is amazing what people can do now.
It is amazing.
You know.
And I would like to think that the cream rises to the top.
Oh, absolutely. Me too.
Do you believe that? Or do you?
Yeah, well, I do. I really do. I mean, you really have to be what I said in here, an entrepreneur. If you're not an entrepreneur at heart in this business,
yeah.
You're pretty
It's 20% talent, 80% gumption.
And you've got to get the guy, and you've got to keep going. I mean,
stick-to-itiveness.
What part of the hand jobs?
How I know, really, thank you. Where should I be doing this?
Oh, now,
can
listen.
I just,
oh, go ahead.
Well, I have a special request.
Yes?
Which is the Sherry Bobbins, of course, I love the Simpsons.
Right? Yes.
My favorite part of the Sherry Bobbins episode, and I didn't really think about this until you were talking about it, is that she realizes she can make no impact on the Simpsons and gets drunk. And she's singing Wasting Away Again in Margaritaville.
Yeah.
The hallway. Can you possibly just do that a little bit?
Wasting Away Again in Margaritaville. No, I didn't go.
Well, looking for
but
my
it was about,
lost
I've got
chicken.
To tell you, actually,
yes.
That when I was doing Sherry Bobbins, I was only supposed to do that as understudying Julie Andrews.
I was not.
So the thing for me is when I sang those songs, I had two passes at it, and that was just so they could do everything to get it together for Julie to do. And then Julie Andrews was, they were on the fence. They didn't know. And they were going to do something possibly back with Disney again. So she passed. And then I thought, oh, well, they'll get some big star to do it. And then they said, well, Maggie, you should do it. You know, we like it, you know, and it's one of the only vocal impressions that I can do. So for me, the ultimate to have that. And when Spence and I sat down and got the videotape at the time to be able to watch it over and over and over again, we thought, wow, when we saw this show, you know, and when you saw the film, you waited until those films came out. You never saw it again for the 8 billionth time.
Yeah.
And when I would watch Spence watch all these things, and you know, with the kids, like going, let me see it again. You go, no, I can't watch that one more time.
Yeah.
But for me, it was great to what a rush for me to be able to do that
and then
to be able to nominate for it.
That was one of the funniest episodes of The Simpsons, and it's completely memorable.
It was one of the, when I saw it the other day, because I was doing a live thing the other day and someone had played it, and it really was flawless.
That is so exciting. Now, when they you just did it as you were practicing, you know, doing kind of filling in for the Julie Andrews part.
So they can animate
and then
it.
When
yeah,
they,
so they
called,
can animate
then
it.
They called you and they said, hey, guess what, Maggie? We're going to put you in.
Did you re-record any of that stuff?
No.
No.
Because, see, in a way it was good because I'm a mezzo belter. I'm not a coloratura soprano. And her voice is from
me
the
either.
Planet. I know.
Yeah.
And so I would have really, if I was doing it, I probably would have said, can you lower it? But it was great to have to force myself to
do
that.
Wow. Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. In the very beginning,
right,
with Tracy Ullman. So you met her.
Yeah.
And you worked with her.
Uh-huh.
What a talent.
Uh-huh.
And then you worked with Sam Simon and Matt Groening right in the very, very beginning.
Yeah.
And Hank Azaria.
Right.
And you're all there together.
Right.
And nobody has any idea what this is going to be.
No.
And what is the atmosphere in the room? You know, when
together. When we used to do it, and that was why The Simpsons was so amazing, is we all sat at a table read like you do if you're doing a TV show. And most animation, you do it in like 2 hours maybe.
Yeah.
You open the thing. They'll say, these are the characters you're playing. Three characters for one voice. Well, The Simpsons, they wrote it and did it. And we were there from early in the morning to late in the afternoon, and they were rewriting.
Wow.
So on Thursdays, they would do that. Now it's much more of them pulling it together and knowing. But initially, we were sitting in this huge soundstage, and all of us sat there all day long, and then they would bring in rewrites.
Just like a sitcom. They did.
Just like a sitcom.
Yeah.
And that was what was so different about it.
And so now Hank Azaria is down in New Orleans.
Harry Shearer is down in New Orleans,
and he can just do his lines from there.
Hank Azaria's in New York, and he's doing Ray Donovan, the new series.
So those guys never see each other.
No. And so, when I was in Denver, I didn't see anybody forever.
I just think that's fascinating, and I don't think people realize that. Even now, people know that you have home studios and by the way, I have a recording studio in my closet. Thank you.
Oh, see, there you go.
And I audition from there, yeah. But I think people don't realize out there that you know, you're watching The Simpsons and all these voices are coming from really all over the world.
Right.
And it's just all coming together in this little package.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like now I know a guy at work who does voiceover stuff and it's like we were in the break room. He's like, listen, I don't want to be a dick, but can everybody just be quiet for a minute? I have to record this audition. And then we also, there's 12 people staring at this guy's back while he's got his computer up on the, you know, the food thing there. And he's like, yes, Mr. Johnson. Yes, Mr. Johnson. Yes, Mr. Johnson. All right, thank you. So it's like that guy just recorded something. What the hell?
Here comes the prince.
But see, isn't that the part of Los Angeles, like you were saying earlier, the outrageous opportunities that things can just come up, and then you have that moment.
No, the auditions that we've gone, Innovative Artists is an amazing agency, and we've gone up for amazing
And your website
things.
Is beautiful, that Innovative Artists website. Is it? Wait a minute. What's the website of your recording studio?
Oh, no. AudioRNR.com.
Okay. AudioRNR.com is a wonderful website.
And it's
so clean.
And now we're just pretty much, and now we have to redo it because people go, you're still in Colorado? No, we're here now, babe.
But it's a great website. Yeah, it's really clear and comprehensive. Really, you had a webmaster for that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so hard to build a website.
Oh, my God.
That's
it was
the
insane.
Thing.
That was back in the day, too, where that one was not as easy to change as they are now. Like, I just did the MaggieRozzle.com.
The Squarespace or whatever.
I
have stuff on GoDaddy and Squarespace, but it's still something you have to learn. There's a process.
So
you can't ever just be talent and just come in and do it.
Well, see, that's what I said.
You have to do it all.
That's what I said to a lot of people. I say, you got to do all of it.
Let me tell you something. You're preaching the choir right there.
Know.
All right. Hey, listen, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Sure.
That music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
What's this? Ah, pets. Pets is good. Okay. Pets is good. Well, we have two dogs. We used to have Pancho and Jinx now. And Pancho de la Rancho, who is the head honcho. And he is when I was in Colorado, they used to say, what kind of dog is that? And then I'd say, oh, you know, he's a Shali. And then they'd go, a Shali? Shepherd Collie. Because I love the people now that are just saying, oh, he's purebred. And we have Jinx. He's a black dog that we adopted. And he was on Friday the 13th, and they castrated him that day. So we figured Jinx is a good name. Plus, in that way, we can always say, and hijinks ensued. And it's always perfect.
Hey. See, that's a good topic, pets, right? Yeah. I mean, everybody has a story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right away.
Oh,
did
totally.
You sell your house in Colorado?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you are
like 5
out.
Minutes.
Yeah, so you're out.
Yeah.
Why did you sell it in 5 minutes? Then maybe it wasn't priced high enough.
Oh, no. No, in Colorado. No, we didn't. We sold it. I mean, we got a good price. We, got $605 for it.
Wow, that's a lot of money there.
But then we bought a fixer-upper for $695 on Burbank. Yeah. A fixer-upper
for $700,000.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, Los Angeles.
Yeah, you can't beat
it. It's really something else. I mean, I'm still in an apartment, and I don't know. I just justify it because I am very close to the tennis courts.
See, I think it's good.
And I love.
You have to play tennis.
Do you play?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, right on,
that
man.
That's my best thing. That was one of the reasons I was sad to leave.
Oh, and how interesting. Oh, I play 4 or 5 days a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Awesome.
Oh, I was going to. You were talking about the weather. I just have to say this. It's like, see, you grew up in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, my God, snow and summer. It's like when you grow up in where there's a brutal winter all the time, you come out here and you're like, I'm so glad that it's never winter out here.
Well, my husband's from Indiana. And when I used to, when I went there for a Christmas one time, I kept thinking, oh, it's going to be so gray and it's going to be snowy. And I just said, well, where's the snow? He said, well, there, you know, it's usually gray. I mean, sometimes
it's cold
snows,
gray cold with a hard ground.
And gross.
Yeah.
And I went, what? What do you mean? What are you saying?
Well, December is the best chance because you get into January and February. The snow's been there.
It's too cold.
Collecting pollution for 3 months. So now it's black snow.
And now it's black snow. Well, see, and the problem with when you're in Colorado is that the best known, you know, thing about it is that it's big white flakes like, you know, Courier knives.
Yeah.
And then it's gone by noon.
Yeah.
So I lived in New York. I lived in Manhattan. So I lived there for 5 years. So you really feel that cold when it freezes to your face.
Yeah.
And when people used to say to me in Colorado, oh, I hate the summers here. I just wish it would be that all the time. I said, you know what? There is a whole coast out there that has your name on it.
Yeah.
You should go. Because it is. It's fantastic.
However, Colorado, you can get frostbitten and snow and sunburnt in the same day.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah.
I mean, Colorado is extreme.
Doesn't matter because you're high as a kite.
Yes, really. Well, what would be the problem? You know, well, that's the thing. I just,
why did you leave?
I know. Well, that's it. Well, the great thing is that we've gone from a red state to a blue state.
Yeah.
When we were there, you know, we had won the Stanley Cup. We did all the stuff.
And yeah,
when
you
we
saw
moved
a lot.
Here, they just did the Stanley Cup, and we said, "This is because we moved." But the you know the whole pod deal, I just went, "This is great," and now. What we're moving and then you're seeing problems with it in California, and I just laugh. I just heard the other day they're trying to make California like five states or something. Somebody's trying.
Somebody's trying to separate. It's never going to happen.
Asshole who is a trillionaire investor is. I was reading about it. Six states.
Right.
He wants to separate.
Stupid.
It's the stupidest thing.
It's like
thing
you
ever.
Might be able to take Colorado. I mean, California divided into two states, north and south. But it's like.
But I think the people in the Mid-coast, like in my family in San Luis Obispo, they would be like, no, we don't want to be Northern California. We are Central Coast.
Yeah.
So you probably could do three.
I love San Luis Obispo.
By the way, I was just in San Luis Obispo 3 days ago.
Oh, it's
love
it's
that
great.
Place.
It's a great place.
I ate at a place called the Big Sky Cafe.
Oh, yeah, that's right
in
the corner.
It's all organic. Holy shit.
That's
it was
a good restaurant.
Fucking awesome.
Good.
Great. Yeah, it was awesome.
Your parents are alive?
No.
They passed.
So yes, they did because they smoked. What a surprise.
Yeah.
I used to grow up in a house where my dad had five packs of Camel non-filter. My mom smoked four a day. My mom smoked four packs of Viceroy a day. My brother smoked two packs of Marlboro, and my sister probably smoked two packs of Marlboro. And I go, and people, I said, I've smoked enough for like.
Did you ever smoke cigarettes?
No,
but
well,
I understand. Her second,
I would be dumping out these ashtrays that were overflowing.
Yeah.
The wild thing now is people are starting to smoke again. You want to go, really?
These goddamn kids. You know. No, it's so true. They're like 25 and they're like smoking. I'm like, what are you fucking retarded? Yeah. What's wrong with you?
The kids, you know, you kind of go, you know, I'll live forever. But the adults now that I know that are my age are like going, you know what, I'm smoking again. I go, okay.
Yeah.
I guess that whole death wish thing is working for you, eh?
Yeah, you know, I guess. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I don't get it.
And I think vaping is the way to go if you need to smoke.
Right.
If you vape, then you're not getting anything.
Well, this is so funny because this is what my daughter did the other, you know, she was vaping.
Yeah.
Who knew? And so like, I said, you know, babe, you're still taking something in and you're blowing something out. And she goes, it's just water. It's just stuff. And I went, there's something.
No, there's not. Vaping. No, they just came out with a study at Drexel University and Harvard came out with the new studies on vaping. And there is absolutely nothing harmful about vaping.
Vaping.
Nothing.
Except for that incredibly stupid word,
unless you
vaping.
Get this really bad oil and stuff from like China, sometimes they can have components in it that aren't good, but you know.
I like you're it. Vapid. I'm a vapid vapor.
Hey, listen, I can't thank you enough for coming
absolutely.
And talking to us because I'm always thrilled to talk about Simpsons.
And I've got my fish.
Such a talent.
We got a fish.
You got a trout.
I got a trout.
That's just trying to bring a little Colorado back to you.
It is bringing a little Colorado back to me, and I love this. I love the trout.
She's holding a trout, you guys, like as if she just won an award.
It's like I did win an award. I want to thank you for the trout. I'd like to thank the Academy. Well, thanks, you guys.
You can do a little Julia Childs where you're holding it.
Well, actually, what I could do is take it apart one by one. They say if you cut off the fish head, you know what's going to happen on the end.
She's so talented. Oh, my gosh. All right, you guys, we got to wrap it up right about now. I wanted to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Sean Merrick and, of course, Darren McAvee. You know, he's working in the other office over there.
Yeah, I'm sure that he has never seen this guy in my life. Never.
And, of course, John Thomas Griffith. You know, he's the guy that wrote the theme song, Storyworthy. Follow me.
Yeah, I don't know who he is.
And on behalf of our storyteller tonight, Maggie Roswell, what a
Maggie
thrill
Roswell.
To have you. Thank
it's
you again.
Great to be here.
And, of course, you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host. My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy week.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.